Some parsha like we said we're going to try to do on Thursdays. If I were to start with the phrase "Kisete la melchama aloivecha," so the immediate thing that you'd probably that would probably come to mind is the beginning of Parshas Kisete, Kisete la melchama aloivecha. But I could just have easily been reading those very same words from last week's parsha, because in fact, in last week's parsha, we also had a Kisete la melchama aloivecha, and in fact, toward the end of last week's parsha, we had parsha after parsha about what happens in war and what happens in the aftermath of war. So you have parsha after parsha relating to what happens. But Milchama, the Yisrael Baltash, this is in the context of Milchama. So essentially, the end of last week's parsha is really the war section of the Torah. And sometimes it helps, like, to zoom out a little bit and see, like, what's going on in this section of the Torah. It helps in terms of learning anything, really, learning Gemara. It was just last week, Rabbi David Bashefkin wanted to interview me for the Jewish Action. He's interviewing Daf Yomi Magide Shir. So I happened to give a Daf Yomi Shir, so he interviewed me in honor of the upcoming Siyum HaShach. So he was asking, like, are there any good note-taking ideas for Daf Yomi? So I said, I don't know if there are any good ideas. I'll tell you what I do is that sometimes after, and I learned this when I was in my early admissions year here in YU, by Rabbi Baruch Simon, is he told us that after you finish an Amud of Gemara, take a step back and just, like, see if you could summarize in a sentence or two what just happened, you know, what the whole Amud was about. And if you could summarize it in a sentence or two or three, then you have the picture of what happened. At least you can map out what happened. You know, a lot of times you can read word for word, and you could identify and you can translate word for word, and you could read it even smoothly, but, like, you don't realize, oh, what just happened was that we had a machlokas, we had two nafkaminas, we had four rayas, we rejected three of the rayas and accepted one of them. And if you could just look big picture, so that helps with the Torah also. That if you take just, like, a big picture look of what's going on in this area of the Torah, so it's very clear, the end of last week's parasha, the beginning of this week's parasha, it's a war discussion. It's all about what happens about when we go to war. And it really flows very seamlessly, or almost seamlessly. Because then, dropped right in the middle of all that discussion of wars, at the very end of last week's parasha, we have Egla Rufa. And Egla Rufa has absolutely nothing to do with the war. The guy wasn't killed in war, there was no war going on. It's just they found an abandoned dead body. It has nothing to do with Milchama. So why would the Torah pause in the middle of Hilchos Milchama with a discussion of a single body of some John Doe found between two cities at a time of peace? That's question number one. Question number two, in this week's parasha, the Torah paints a pretty positive picture of the outcome of our wars. Obviously, war is always messy, but what's going to happen? You can go to war, and Hashem is just going to give them over in our hands. And we trust that whatever happens, whatever our successes are, it's all obviously from the Ribbono Shel Olam. If you look in Bamidbar Perek Yud, the Torah also describes how we might be victorious in war, but it doesn't just say Hashem's going to give them over in our hands. And we describe that there's another step. We have to blow these chatzotros. We have to blow these trumpets. We need a certain siyata d'shemaya that's going to come by blasting the chatzotros. So essentially, I guess what I'm asking is, what exactly is the factor that predicts success in our parsha and the need for that little extra siyata d'shemaya in Parshas Baal Oscha? Why is it that sometimes, or how, can we effectively game plan for success in Milchama, or a more easy time when it comes to Milchama? So there's a beautiful insight that the Chafetz Chaim has. When the Torah speaks about war, the Chafetz Chaim points out that the Torah obviously knows how overwhelming, Kadosh Baruch Hu knows how overwhelming the experience of war is for a human being. There's a lot of details that go into planning a battle, implementing the plan. There are surprises along the way. A lot of times, you know, there is an enemy that is also thinking and intuitive and reactionary, and we can't always predict how they're going to act or react in given circumstances. So there's a natural anxiety that comes with mortal danger and the responsibility not only of human life but the responsibility of the future of an entire nation on the shoulders of these soldiers. So one can easily imagine that at a time of war, when a person is focused on the country, that it's possible to lose sight of the value of the individual. The daily struggles that people continue to go through, they're still there. People are still people, and people still have the same problems they always have, but now they have this big, gigantic problem called a war. And therefore, the daily in and out, the daily issues that we go through are much more likely to be ignored. You know, it's similar to like if someone goes through a life experience, a traumatic life experience. Rahman al-Sani, you have people who suddenly there's a diagnosis and it like shakes up everything in their lives. That there's an illness in the family. You know, those people who are dealing with that 24/7 and talking to doctors and going to specialists and trying to fight for a few extra months of life and trying to figure out if there's any treatment of this and it's what's going to be with the kids and what's going to be. People who go through these kinds of things, you know what? They still have parking tickets. They still have parent-teacher conferences. They still have grocery shopping to do. All of the regular things and the regular annoyances that people have in life, they also still have. They can't really focus on them because they're focused on that one big thing. And the Chafetz Chaim points out that the Torah, by inserting the parsha of Egla Arufa, smack in the middle of a discussion of the one big thing of war, reminds us that we're never to lose sight of the individual, that we have to realize that why is it that one big thing is so important? Because we're fighting for people. Don't forget what we're fighting for. We care for each and every individual, and we're taking responsibility for each and every individual. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Brachos that David HaMelech, who dealt with problems that were of a national and international significance on a daily basis, right? The Gemara tells us that every day they would come and they would describe the problems, the economic issues of the time, and they would discuss whether they should go to war. And David HaMelech said, Yadai Meluch Lachos, Bedam Shvir, Bedam Shilya, Kedei Letar Yishe Levayla. Torah Sashlam actually, in Hilchos Nida, actually uses that as a raya, whether you can look at a wet mara, or whether you're allowed to look at a dry mara, that's for a different time. But David HaMelech is dealing with being Matir Yishe Levayla, about individuals and their home life and their shalom bayis, because you can't lose sight of what you're fighting for, even when the fight is so overwhelming. And it's really not only a valuable lesson for a soldier, but an equally valuable lesson for a civilian. The soldier isn't just fighting for a nation, he's fighting for the individuals in that nation, for each of us to be able to live with our freedoms, with our comforts, with everything that we want to live with. Rasir Schweiner writes in his book on Chumash, in his Sefer on Chumash, of a conversation that he overheard between two people at a haskara for a fallen soldier. And one person said, look, the soldier gave up his life so that we can live ours. Right? A profound statement, an important statement, a healthy reminder that this young person gave up his life so that we can live our lives. And the other person responded, yes, that's undoubtedly true, but you have to take it to the next step. It makes us think, is the way I am living my life worth the sacrifice? He sacrificed so that we could live our lives. So am I doing it? Am I living a life that's worth his sacrifice? If each fallen chayal gave up his life so I can live mine, doesn't it behoove me to live a life that's worth saving? So the idea of the Chafetz Chaim, this message, is a critically important message that there are big things that happen, but when there are big things that happen on a national level, we have to realize that they are so important because of all the little people, because of all of the of what we're trying to protect, and it's a critical message in so many areas of life, but it's also a very difficult message to sort of internalize and put into practice. You know, we have to remember the individual, even the context of the problem. But how do you walk and chew gum at the same time? How are we supposed to maintain focus on the individual even as we're dealing with something so big, so overwhelming? So, a mahalich, and not the only mahalich, and not the answer per se, but something that's, I think, healthy for us, particularly at this time of year. How many of you are on Twitter? Anyone on Twitter here? Yeah, so Benji Epstein. How many of you ever went to ask? No, Benji Epstein? So Benji Epstein is a fantastic person, just in general. He wrote a fantastic book, and he's been dealing with, last summer he had a hashtag that he was tweeting throughout the entire summer. Let's see, how good are you on Twitter? What was the hashtag? No? Okay, so this year it's Be Here, Be Now, right? It was, right, because it's a big, last year it was a different hashtag that he was, I don't know if it was a hashtag or just something that he kept on saying, keeping the main thing, right? So what does it mean to keep the main thing, the main thing? So I think what he meant, if I understand correctly, I don't always understand, but if I understand correctly, what he means to say is that we don't have to focus on dozens of things simultaneously. We only need to focus on one thing. And we'll be surprised if we can properly identify the one thing that's worth focusing on. Many of the other things are just subcategories of that one thing. Meaning many of the other issues in our life come into much sharper focus when we know what that one thing is, when we know what that one thing worth focusing on is. My friend Rabbi Ephraim Goldberg has been talking a lot about this recently also, about the idea of like removing a lot of the clutter. Not because the clutter is not important. Some of it's important, but a lot of it's not important. But there's a lot of things in our life that are important, but don't need their own particular focus. Meaning, if you focus on something bigger, let me give an example. After Rav Moshe Tversky, Zichrono Livracha, Zechut Tzadik B'Kadosh Livracha, was murdered, Rav Meir Tversky spoke several times. He spoke in Farakwa, he spoke in Yeshiva, he spoke a few times about his brother's life, which, by the way, it's just so interesting when you hear the descriptions coming from Rav Tversky about his brother. He could be describing himself, right? Meaning, like it's he would never say that, obviously. But it's just pretty incredible. Meaning, as Rav Tversky pointed out, one tends to admire in others what they value most, right? So one of the things that Rav Tversky said about his brother's personality was the seeming contradictions in his brother's personality. Well, what does it mean, contradictions? On the one hand, here was a person who never wasted a second of time. He was an awe-inspiring masmid. He'd run from one place to the next because every second was precious. And chas v'shalom, it took him an extra 10 seconds to get from one place to the next. That's 10 seconds of lost time that he's never going to get back. And yet, if somebody would come to speak to him about their struggles, he could speak for hours without ever making that person feel that he had somewhere else to be, something else to do, that in some way he was getting in their way. That he was getting in his way, that, like, come on, you know. Sometimes, you know, you're talking, it's like you lose patience after a while. Okay, we've been through this already, I got things to do. No, he never got that sense. He would sit for hours and talk to someone. Rav Meir Tversky explained, it's not a stira. He said his brother didn't think about particular actions. He thought about one thing, the main thing, serving the Ribbono Shel. Sometimes you can serve Hashem by learning His Torah. Very often you can serve Hashem by learning His Torah. Sometimes you can serve Hashem by giving chizik to another person. And it's all the same. The same hasmada that he had in Limud HaTorah was the hasmada that he had in giving chizik to a Talmud or to a neighbor or to someone who needed chizik. It's not a stira. It's about thinking about what the main thing is. And then many other details in life tend to fall into place. And the Farshim understand the Milchama referred to in our Parsha as a Milchemes HaYetzer. You open up pretty much any Sefer on the Parsha, or any Musar Sefer, you know, they all talk about Kiseitzel Milchama Levecha, Ein Evecha Ela Yetzer Hara, right? That's a reference to the Yetzer Hara. And when we're caught up in the Milchemes HaYetzer, it's also very easy to get distracted because we're fighting the battle on 1,000 different fronts. Right, meaning there are very few of us that could say, "Yeah, I only do one avera." There's one thing I got to fix. You know, like I sometimes lose a little concentration in like the 12th brach of Shemona Esrei or something. Right, there are very few of us that can pinpoint like one thing that we're fighting huge battles all over the place. We're putting out fires. Our whole life is putting out fires. And with the Milchamas HaYetzer, that's what it is also. how do we focus on little missteps and spiritual shortcomings when the Yetzer Hara is coming at us with everything he's got from all directions? So Rav Nissen Kaplan, Shlita, explained based on a very well-known story that the Gemara records both in Maseches Nazir and in Maseches Nedarim. The Gemara tells in Nedarim Daf Tes, Amar Shimon HaTzadik, Miyomei lo achalti Asham Nazir Tamei el Echad, that I've only ever eaten one Asham Nazir Tamei, meaning a person accepts Nazirus, so you better be darn sure that you can make it, you know, that you'll be able to make it through B'Tahara. You're going to become Tamei, and then you're going to have to bring Karbanos of Tumah. You know what? Maybe you shouldn't have accepted Nazirus in the first place. It's not always a bright idea to accept Nazirus, right? Especially nowadays, because you have no out, right? The only way to end it is with bringing Karbanos. I once had a guy came to my shul with a beard and payas and the whole thing, and we counted. It was like Erev Shabbos Chanukah or something, and people were running a little late, and we had to start Mincha. So I counted 10, and his host, who he was staying at, said, no, you have 9. I said, well, what do you mean? It looks like we have 10. That guy, he's got a beard like this. He looks like he's over Bar Mitzvah. He's like, no, he's not Jewish. He's got a beard. He's got face. He's got this big yarmulke. Yeah, he learns in a kollel in Williamsburg or whatever, but he's not Jewish. He's really from a Southern Baptist family in Texas, and he just really loves Torah. So I don't think they know in the kollel, but he just sits and he learns all day. Very interesting. So I said, maybe he should consider conversion. Yeah, he's not really interested in converting. What? So the next time he came, it was like the following year, Pesach, he had converted already. But now, not only did he have a beard, he had long hair also. Because after he converted, he became a Nazir. So they had a Shiloh, what should they do about charoses? Can they put wine in the charoses like Dalit Kosos? Like, you know, you have bigger problems than charoses. But it's so, it's unusual, right? A person can take on a Nazirus, and you better be absolutely sure that you can make it if you're going to take on a Nazirus. So Shimon HaTzadik says, I didn't eat from an Asham Nazir Tameh, you know, like a protest. I once saw the most magnificent looking Nazir, and I said, you have this beautiful hair, why would you want to destroy it? Because you have to shave it all off as part of the process. So I was a shepherd for my father in my city, and I went to fill up mayim in a mayan, and in stakalti bebabu ashali, I saw my reflection upachazalai yitzri, and my yitzer hara overpowered me. I became agitated with my yitzer hara. Ubikish l'tardeni min olam. Amarti lo. So at that moment, I said to the yitzer, Russia, lama ata miskal abalam sheno shulcha. Why are you taking pride in this world that's not really yours? You know, you're ultimately going to be rotten flesh like everybody else. And therefore, I'm going to shave this hair off l'shamayim. So miyad amadati, says Shimon HaTzadik, v'neshaktav al rosha, I kissed him on his head. Amarti lo, b'ni, kamochi yirbu nozrei nazirus b'Yisrael. That there should be more like you in the Jewish people, which is always a beautiful bracha, that there should be more like you in the Jewish people. Meaning, even though I'm against taking on nazirus, says Shimon HaTzadik, a nazir like you, we could tolerate. So what did the nazir learn at the moment that he saw his reflection? Like, did he not realize he was good looking? Like beforehand, he was he must have realized, right? He must have like the shidduch resumes must have been like flying in. Like he must have someone must have, his mother must have, someone must have told him that he's a good looking guy. Was he unaware of his pride in it? So this explains that he was certainly aware of all of everything. His epiphany was bikesh l'tardeni min ha'olam. Of course, he fought battles with the Yetzer Hara like everybody else, but in all of its different forms, it comes with one simple goal: to keep me out of Olam Haba, to break my connection with Hashem. That he had this moment where he said, "It's really only one thing. It's really only the main thing. That is Avodas Hashem, and every decision just has to be filtered through that one yediya." Chafetz Chaim was very, very poor. By choice, really, they say. You know, certainly, once his reputation developed, he would close his store every day after 5 minutes because they had enough money to survive for that day. But before his reputation developed, when his children were young, his wife would serve him a cup of hot tea and a piece of stale bread that was brought on, that was bought on discount from the baker because it was no longer fresh, you know, whatever leftovers they had. And one morning his wife served him his tea and didn't give him his bread, and there wasn't enough money for the bread. And the Rebbetzin, with tears in her eyes, gives her husband the tea, no bread. And his daughter clearly remembered that while learning that day, the Chafetz Chaim at some point banged his hand on the table and he said, I know what the Yetzer Hara wants. He wants Yisrael Meir not to be a Talmud Chacham, not to learn Torah. He didn't see a challenge as Stam, another difficulty in life. He saw it as part of the big picture of the Yetzer Hara stopping him from connecting to the Ribon Shalom. The Yetzer Hara stopping him from learning Torah. Maybe our questions that we started with maybe aren't such, you know, we can answer these questions. When the Torah described Ki Savo Melchama Ba'aretzchem, it uses a plural to describe multiple battles, multiple enemies. And when we see it in that way, yeah, we will require chatzotzros. The chatzotzros are going to be a critical part because the chatzotzros sort of focus us to pay attention to what matters, and that's Malchus Shemayim. And then we're ready to fight the war. But when we go out to fight a single war, when we go out to fight a single war, and we proactively identify the enemy and attack, then we can rest assured that if we know where the battle is, we can Hashem will give him over in our hands. The Parsha of Egel Arufa is exactly the message that a person needs at a time of war. If you can consolidate all of the challenges into one big but not insurmountable problem, but it's just focuses us, then we're truly ready for battle. And that has to be the Ashkafa, or part of the Ashkafa, of Chodesh Elul, of Yom Noraim. It can't be focused on some detail or another, or worse than focusing on just one detail or another, to focus on nothing, because there's just too much to focus on. You know, that's what's called decision paralysis sometimes. Like you have so many different things in front of you, I can't deal with it. And then we just shut off, and like most of us, just like ignore Elul. It's just another day, just another day, just another day. We have to find what to focus on the one thing, on the only thing, on our connection to the Ribon Shalom. You know, there's one of the unique challenges of our yeshiva is that there's always something to get excited about, agitated about. You know, there's always something to distract us. There's lots of things going on. I'm going to be in Chicago on Sunday, so I'm going to miss it. Maybe. But there's lots of things going on all the time. And it's important that no matter how many different things are going on, we have to recognize we're here to be Ovdei Hashem. We're here to develop our connection with Hashem. We're not here to save Klal Yisrael. I mentioned the Beis Medrash last week. You know, you are going to be great leaders of the Jewish people, but not today, right? Meaning, not now. Now you're here to learn, you're here to focus, you're here to become Ovdei Hashem. And what will overflow from that over time is a sense of Yashrus, a sense of an understanding of Ratzon Hashem, and ultimately, as life goes on, there will be Talmidim, and there will be Chaverim, and there will be people who look up to you, and you'll have a Mishpacha, and there will be and all of those things will happen. But right now, we have to focus. It's Chodesh Elul. We don't have time to get distracted by too many things, by anything really. We just need to focus on our avodah. And that should be what our conversation's about. It should be what what we're thinking about in our downtime. Much more valuable to think about in your downtime how it is that you learn Siman Kuf Pei Vav in Yardaya. You know, if it's a daf and a half of the Gemara in there, 8 different statements of the Gemara, and how's that going to fit and translate into the halacha? And can I really understand every line of that shach? You know, work on that. It's more important than all of the other stuff that goes on around us. It's energizing that there's a lot of energy, but we have to make sure that the energy is channeled in the right direction. So with that, let's begin some of the statements. Okay.